Hi, and welcome to Stats Book Talk, where we discuss How to Lie with Statistics, a book by Daryl Hough. I'm Lisa Kang, and I'm here with Maggie Hohenstein. Today we will be discussing chapters 3, 4, and 5 of the book. But first, we want to talk about some of the things that we missed in the first few chapters. Okay, so in the very beginning of the book, there was a page with a list of quotes, and we wanted to talk about how one of them relates to the introduction. In the introduction, it talks about this guy's father who read in a newspaper that there were so many crimes, which is true. There are lots of crimes, but in the sense for the statistics that he was reading was false. The stats from the article was biased, so there's really no telling how true or like how much of that you can believe. So I guess what the quote is kind of saying is that with statistics, you have to be careful because a lot of people believe that, you know, it's completely true and it's not fake or not true. It's just that they're leaving a lot of things out. Okay, so there's a part in chapter 1 that we would like to share.
On page 18, there's a paragraph that starts, "A river cannot." In my words, it sounds like this. The results of a sampling study can create the same type of illusion as a river moving about its source. Unless aided by other things, a river will always be subject to gravity and move downwards. Statistics is similar because you have to look closely to make sure there are no hidden ideas, such as a bad sample, that will move the results in the desired direction.
To go along with that paragraph, Chapter 1 also talks a lot about sample biases and how there will almost always be one. An example of this could be seen in the toothpaste study.
You're like, oh wow, this really helps. This toothpaste is great. It's wonderful.
Hey, look at that. Everybody gets fewer cavities. I don't know, for me, I feel like, why can people do that? I know that, like, I feel like it's a silly thing to, like, have laws against. But at the same time, it's kind of like, but so there's just all this false information.
Right, and there's real math to, like, back it up. Right, but they need to, like, have big numbers to show consumers so that they can get more people to buy their products. Saying, like, a 23% increase looks a lot better than a 2% increase.
Well, because it does.
Yeah.
Why don't we just find other ways to advertise, though? Why don't we find ways that are actually true?
When it comes to studies, the only way that you can come up with pretty accurate data is to have a stratified random sample, which takes into account the different categories that can fit into a sample. But there are lots of difficulties with that because it's really impossible to get all the categories. You're always going to miss someone.
And we know companies aren't going to go and test things, a lot of things, or a lot of people, or whatever.
It also costs money for them to do that.
Yeah. They don't want that. They want to make money.
Yeah.
So what exactly are these statistics that we're reading?
Well, I don't know. What do you call them? They're not fake, but they're not exactly true.
They're not true. I mean, I guess you would just call them real. But even that is kind of a stretch because it's not legitimate.
So since you can't believe all of these statistics, what can you do? Well, there are things that you can look at. And we're going to be talking about averages in specific.
As well as asking what kind of average is being used, we should ask about the data. How the data was collected could change the bias and therefore affect the average. The number of data points collected could change the representation that the average has, because small samples are less accurate than large samples. If you're trying to compare the performance of two math classes, the best average to use would be median. Median would likely give you the most information in the scenario. It would allow you to examine where the central point of both of your classes are. Since the mean is not resistant to outliers, it would change if one student was doing much better or worse than the others. Mode would only give you information about how most people are doing, but you don't know what percentage of people are scoring higher or lower than that score. Therefore, median will give you the most information.
A lot of times people will get the mean number, but they don't worry about what that means because they don't know anything about, like, what the range is. Because if it has a really small range, most things are close to the mean. If it has a really big range, because nothing is close to the mean.
Yeah, I thought it was really weird when they're explaining the, like, probable error. And they're like, plus or minus 3 to both of them. And then they were saying that Peter was actually superior instead of inferior.
My issue with that was that, like, he could be.
Yeah.
But he's not.
Also, it's more likely that she's, like, superior.
Yeah, she still has, like, her little section of numbers is still higher than his is. I mean, they overlap, and it's a possibility. But it's also a possibility that they're the same, and it's also a possibility that she's a higher IQ test.
Next, we began talking about how graphs also tend to lie to us.
So this was really, this made a lot of sense to me because we do this kind of thing in, like, algebra math when you want a better look at what the graph looks like. Mm-hmm. So you'll make your y-axis have smaller intervals if you want to focus on that change.
To continue talking about graphs, Maggie and I have both chosen our own examples of misleading graphs, and we'll talk about them here.
I looked at a graph representing the Obamacare enrollment. The y-axis in this graph is not labeled. However, it is clear that it does not start at zero. We know this because the first bar represents 6 million people and is close to a third of the size of the bar that represents 7,066,000 people. This makes people believe that the goal has increased an insane amount when in reality the difference is not that extreme.
I looked at a graph from Fox News showing the unemployment rate under Obama from January of 2011 to November of 2011. It's a line graph, which means that it shows a trend over time. When taking a glance, you can see that the y-axis is very small and not as spread out. What really stands out here is that if you were to take a look at the number, 8.6% seems to be on the same level as 9%, but 8.8 and 8.9% are much lower. That makes no sense.
Really annoying. They do whatever they can to make it look like they're doing amazing things. And everyone's just like, yeah, totally. Because I don't think about it when I see numbers. Like, when I'm reading statistics or articles, I don't think about the numbers that are there. I don't think about how accurate they are. I'm just like, okay, yeah, you say so.
The other issue with that, which isn't something that's really in the book, is we don't always know where this numbers are coming from when we hear about statistics. Like, a lot of times you'll read things in articles online and you're like, oh yeah, 85% of people do this thing, and you're like, wow, okay, but where did that number come from? Mm-hmm. Who came up with it? Who did the study? Even if it was this kind of not fake, not real study, who did it?
That's all we have on Stats Book Talk for now. Thanks for listening and join us next time.